Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the RMR Holdings Limited audited results ended 30 June 2019. All participants are currently in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please also note this call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Herman Bosman. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, and thank you for the introduction. And welcome to everyone on the call. I'm joined today by Skol Kimon, who is responsible for the preparation of our financial results, Martinus Visser, who is the CEO of OUTsurance, and Jan Hofmeyr, who is the CFO of OUTsurance. So in our invitation to this call, we referred you to a presentation which has been published on our website and also sent to you by email last night. It's not critical for you to have it in front of you, but any reference I make will be to pages on that investor presentation that, as I said, is available on the website. The set of results that we are considering here is commendable across our South African portfolio. They are commendable because they were achieved in difficult macroeconomic environment. We have come off historically low claims ratios at OUTsurance, which was around 47%, as you would recall from the previous reporting period. And we have now reverted to a longer-term claims ratio that will get some attention a bit later. And thirdly, we've achieved these results while investing quite aggressively in growth at OUTsurance and as well as at Discovery. So a very commendable set of results, which we will unpack a bit for you in this presentation. Across the portfolio, we've had a difficult external environment. On page two of the presentation, we talk a bit about what we've seen in South Africa. I'm not going to delve too much into that. The SA economy is very well analyzed at the moment, so I don't have real new insights around the South African economy, which is still showing only fragile signs of growth, lack of policy reform, fiscal strain starting to set in, and the currency obviously being quite volatile and remaining under pressure. So I can only echo the sentiments on the RMH call that more drastic action is needed in the South African economy, and that we really don't need to have a more state-driven economy at this stage when the system is under pressure and the private sector has the capacity to continue to offer the variety of services to the South African community. In the UK, the Brexit uncertainty has definitely caused the UK market to underperform when you compare it to the European counterparts. And we've also had a disinflationary insurance cycle, which hopefully has come to an end as far as Hastings concerned. And then coupled with some unfavorable regulatory pronouncements, it has again, or similar to South Africa, been quite a tough environment in the UK. At a portfolio level, we believe that there are real defensive attributes that this portfolio has. When you look at Hastings, when you look at OUTsurance as well as UE, there's been a consistent underwriting discipline, which we are very proud of. It's the wrong time of the market not to have the pricing discipline and to be chasing the wrong business. So that's been maintained, and you see that come through in the capital and reserve positions of the groups, of the insurance groups. We've further worked on business model efficiencies again across the portfolio, and we believe that the strong brands and the market position that we have across the insurance policy insurance brands will put us in a good position for the future. We've invested in growth, and we will highlight that as we go through Discovery into their banking operations, OUTsurance into commercial, etc. So we think that the attributes of the portfolio has a very strong defensive nature to them, but certainly also takes into account that we want to invest in the future. So On slide two, we conclude that we have a high degree of confidence in the portfolios and that we expect long-term growth to continue, obviously barring a significant macroeconomic shift either here or in the U.K. I wanted to start by just giving you a sense of how RMI has executed on our strategy. That is on page four. You know that we have set ourselves the task to do three things, being optimizing the portfolio, diversifying, as well as modernizing. The optimizing part is probably where most of the focus was over the last reporting period, and it's been a situation of making sure that the defenses are in place and that the operating models are robust to withstand some of the microeconomic or macroeconomic pressures that we have been facing and may continue to face. So a lot of this has been looking at the business model, looking at the underwriting discipline. As I mentioned, all of our businesses have a certain element of underwriting risk in that, and we wanted to make sure that we're writing the right risk and having the right claims experience. On the optimization side, we followed on with further investments in OUTsurance and Discovery, and indirectly into Momentum Metropolitan to the extent that they did a share buyback or had a share buyback program. At OUTsurance, we have accelerated our face-to-face distribution model, as well as the commercial insurance next to the personal lines business that we have in South Africa. And then I think the main operational part has been that Discovery Bank has been built successfully and has launched and is now taking on 1,000 plus customers a day. On the diversification side, because this is mainly oriented towards investment, it's been somewhat more quiet, although we've had a follow-on investment in Perpetua and also acquired a 30% stake in Visio. And we've had a repositioning at Granite Asset Management where where equities team has joined us to build a balanced mandate capability in Granite. On the modernization, over the last number of years, we had a very interesting opportunity to look at building what is a very technologically and technically advanced banking platform at OUTsurance. We have concluded that for the time being, we're not going to use the banking platform ourselves at OUTsurance, and we are in the process of monetizing it. But it was a very interesting, probably more than an experiment, but a very interesting experiment to look at what is possible as far as banking platforms are concerned. We also invested or follow up on investment in Prodigy Finance, which is the MBA student financing business, and we've also made a small investment in Guidepost, which is a chronic disease management business with plans to use that to also get involved in the risk management of affected lives. And we've had a very interesting refresh of Alpha Code, which, as you know, is our incubator. We still we have invested more in that, and we are now running two or three very interesting programs, which you will find on our website, all focused on creating entrepreneurial capacity, and hopefully in the process also create further employment in the country. I think it's important that, as I've mentioned the word discipline a number of times, we've been disciplined in looking at roll out our further investments, and to that extent we've not done much. But we wanted to also give you a sense of where we will be targeting in our new investment side outside the four main operating investments we have at the moment. In asset management, which is Royal Asset Management as well as investment managers, we will not exceed R1 billion of investment. To date, we are at 706. And then the next generation investments, the fintech business, we have at balance sheet date, we've invested 329. Guidepost and Prodigy has added a bit to that, so we're just over 700 as far as the fintech investments are concerned. and we are also limiting that investment to 1.5 billion. In total, on a portfolio of around 60 billion, we will be at total or at maximum, we will be investing 2.5 billion in the new generation type of businesses. Over the page, I'm not gonna dwell long on our investment criteria. I think it's similar to what we've had. We do illustrate, or we do indicate that we have a bias for P&C insurance, for short-term insurance. I think why is that? We have a great experience between OUTsurance, Youi, Hastings, and Discovery to a lesser extent, as well as MSDI, which recently bought Alexander Forbes's business. We think there are skills in the group that can be expanded and applied. We also like the financial metrics of the business, which tend to be capital light and very cash generative. The second point that I think we should highlight is that geography-wise, we focus on South Africa, U.K., and Australia. To the extent that we want to look at further P&C insurance models, it will probably be in the emerging markets rather than other developed markets. That's maybe a slight change to what you've seen before. Lastly, the point I wanted to make would be that we will be disciplined to optimize possible liquidity events. I guess against the backdrop of the new regulatory anti-competitive or antitrust type of regulation that we see, we need to make sure that our portfolio is also geared to withstand any regulatory scrutiny. On our capital structure, there just a couple of updates so that you are clear where we are as far as our financial leverage and financial risk is concerned. Our current leverage ratio is 18% of NAV, which falls squarely in our target ratio. We have moved away from any market-linked covenants, so we only have covenants linked to gross debt to earnings and gross debt to cash flow. We think that we are comfortably and will continue to be comfortably in those, within those covenants. We have also recently extended the funding periods for both our ZAR and British pound facilities for a further three and five years. For those enthusiasts out there, we have GBP exposure of 150 million pounds. That's a quarter of total debt, and we have fixed 50% of our funding as far as the interest rate's concerned. The dividend policy remains unchanged. We will pay all dividends, all normal dividends received after servicing funding commitments. I think the one nuance that you will see there is that we will target dividend growth in line with CPI. What does that mean? That means that if the portfolio can deliver CPI, we would want to pay through a progressive dividend of CPI, of a CPI increase. We will consider that any dividend flow and above CPI will, in the short term, go to slowly redeem debt. We think it's prudent to say to shareholders, we already have a relatively high dividend cover of between 2.5% and 3%, or dividend yield rather, sorry. Dividend yield of 2.5%-3%, which we want to maintain and grow that by CPI, which I think is a great promise that we will try and stick to as far as shareholders are concerned. Anything in addition we want to use for capital structure management. I wanted to have a couple of comments on the holding company structure. Page nine, we set out the moves that we've seen globally as far as investment holding company is concerned. I think generally speaking, we're probably still in an environment where investment holding companies do attract quite a large discount to underlying value. Some of the reasons for that we ascribe to the fact that we've seen muted corporate activity and IPO behavior, so that it is not easy to monetize and create movement and realization of value in an investment holding company. So there's a bit of corporate activity a discount that one has. And then I guess there's also in the past been questions around the governance that an investment holding company would apply versus a set of independent directors. I'm happy to take questions on that, but I just wanted to highlight that the phenomenon of widening discounts has not really eased up in the reporting period that you see. We wanted to give our sense of what that means to the OUTsurance implied valuation. So on slide 10, there are two graphs. The top one shows in the brown line, I hope it comes out brown on your screens, that has been the analyst views of the value of OUTsurance. And this is these numbers are for 100% of OUTsurance. The analysts have been remarkably stable around the 40 billion mark. That has been slightly adjusted to around 38 at the moment. And then as you may know, OUTsurance Management has had a internal DCF model that does a through the cycle valuation of the business, and that's been going for decades now. And you can see that value is around 36 billion for 100% of OUTsurance. The implied market value in the RMI share price at the moment is around 24. And obviously we need to understand why there is this gap between management, who knows the business and sees through the short-term cyclicalities and fluctuations, and what the market is ascribing to the business. I'll come back over the page on what impact the holding company discount may have, but I think the one reflection that we have on the graph at the bottom of the page was that the implied PE ratio of OUTsurance has adjusted downwards, what we think may be in line with the perception around the growth in premium. There are obviously many other factors, but when you think of the PE ratio, which in the beginning of 16 was around the early 20 multiples, that coincided with probably a bit of over exuberance from the market as far as the UE growth was concerned. And I think that's the most important part that we would want to highlight today, and Jan and Martinez will do so, in that over the last number of years, we've almost had a planned slowdown in gross written premium, and Martinez will talk to why that was the case. But I think the important bit is that over the last two reporting periods, we have resumed our growth as far as the top line is concerned, and we are less worried about the sustainability of the operating margin, which again will take some or get some attention shortly. So we hope that over time, as we resume a change in or a growth in gross written premium, that we will see a similar change in the implied PE ratio. Now, having said that, we wanted to over the page indicate what the impact is on the holding company discount. And I'm happy that for those of you who would like to understand the table better, please call us. But it basically says that if you assume a PE ratio at the top, anything between 10 and 16, and 15.37 is management's internal valuation, and you run that across, you will see that at management valuation, it would mean that the group, RMI Group, is trading at a discount of 17.5%. So that is I call it the gap between what the market is implying and what OUTsurance has calculated as their through the cycle valuation. But that only holds true if there's no company holding company discount. If one does ascribe a company holding company discount of, let's say, 10%, and you look at various P's for the business, 13, 14, 15, you see that the gap between the implied value and the value that we think the business should be at is much smaller. So if the real P PE for OUTsurance is 13 and the holding company has a 10% discount, we are trading at fair value. So I guess we wanted to illustrate this sensitivity so that we can just have the conversation around how much of it is holding company discount and how much of it is mispricing, but the gap between the market appreciation of the value and our own valuation. Because I think it's too easy to say you should just list OUTsurance because there's massive gap. It all depends on what assumed PE it is. And if we assume that a holding company discount of 10% is not unrealistic, you can see that the gap may be smaller than you think. But we will continue to work through communication and hopefully to create a better understanding of the business to close that gap. The earnings quality is something I just wanted to quickly reflect on. Here it is firstly, we are very proud of the fact that our short-term insurers, being OUTsurance and Hastings, have a very strong quality of earnings, which we express as what proportion of earnings is in cash. So that you would see Hastings and OUTsurance, being short-term insurers, have a very high degree of cash generation in earnings. MMI or MMH, as they are called now, almost 90% of their earnings is in cash, and then Discovery is at 65%. And we do a little split out of the Discovery earnings quality on the table next to it. The counter to this, or preparing for the future, we also wanted to give you a sense of how much of each group's earnings for that year is invested in new initiatives. And there you see that we're quite happy that enough investment and enough emphasis is also placed on investing in new initiatives. Discovery is probably higher than the target. As you know, they target 10%, but because of the the lumpiness of Discovery Bank, that is probably higher, or is higher than the long-term average should be. Before turning to handing over to Martinez and Jan, a couple of quick reflections on the other three businesses. First of all, Discovery. We've had the mortality spike in Discovery Life in the first half, which has now been largely arrested. And apart from that, we've had very strong performance from the incumbent businesses, especially in South Africa, but then also you would have seen the strong performance from Vitality Health in the UK. I've commented on the fact that the bank is up and running, and that the Vitality One platform, which is the global platform, is also up and running. And then, interestingly enough, it's encouraging that we are now achieving scale in Ping An in China, as well as the Vitality Group. Hastings, it was a difficult year across the financial metrics. We've also had the Ogden reserve impact that we had to cater for. But looking forward, there's a lot to be confident about. Firstly, we've reverted to the lower end of the claims ratio, or at least that's where we want to go. And the retention rate has vastly improved. So I think between the claims, which bumped up against our upper targets, but are starting to trend down softly, and the retention rate, we're very happy. But most importantly, we've seen premium inflation start again in the UK after almost a couple of years of very muted and even negative growth in premium inflation. The business has a strong solvency and capital position, which in a very competitive market is important, that you don't chase the wrong business. And I think, as I mentioned right up front, we're very happy with the robustness of this model. And then lastly, MTM, Momentum Metropolitan, we're seeing some exciting cost recovery there. They've shown strong operating performance of around 20% if you take the rebase effect out. And they are starting to establish a refreshed market positioning. So we're confident that business has turned the corner and is set for a new era of growth. So those are my comments. I'm obviously on here for questions, but I first wanted to hand over to Jan and Martinez to take you through a snapshot of OUTsurance's results.
Thank you, Herman. Yes, maybe if I can take you back sort of 1 year to the OUTsurance results from last year. I think the headline number there was our profits, our normalized profits was up 21%. But at the time, we highlighted a few factors which caused those numbers to be quite high, and we said we're unlikely to repeat that performance in 2019. Those factors were firstly the Australian claims experience, where we had in 2018 very favorable natural peril claims experience, no catastrophes at all. The second thing was our South African claims ratio was also below the bottom of our target band due to favorable vehicle accident claim frequencies. And then on the cost side, we highlighted that we believed that there was scope for investment to achieve better growth. If you recall, last year this time our gross written premium year-on-year growth was a fairly pedestrian 0.8%. And the fourth thing we flagged was we just said, given the competitive and regulatory environments, we believe there's a need for additional investment in some support areas like actuarial, IT, and risk and compliance. Now, if you roll forward to today, I think the year pretty much played out as expected. Our gross written premium accelerated from that 0.8% to a much healthier 7.4% growth. That's linked to the highlight of new business premiums written increasing by a healthy 27.5%. That is also on the back of a recovery at both OUTsurance and at UE. And then on the profitability side, our operating profit was down 9.8%, but as flagged, that was within 1% of our budget. So we did foresee these factors, and as it happened in Australia, we had three catastrophe events, and the claims experience from a natural peril point of view was sort of bang in line with our 5-year and 10-year averages. In South Africa, our claims ratio increased from a sort of 47 to 49.8. Part of that was pricing action, so we lowered our rates deliberately to get into that target band, similar to what we did sort of in 2012. But also, because of the higher new business volumes, we had a slight change in mix, so you have more first-year business, and those typically run at a slightly higher loss ratio. So that's the loss ratio side. In terms of the cost ratio, we did invest more in marketing and sales force, but as we highlighted in our annual report, the acquisition cost expressed as a percentage of new business premium written remained stable, so we did not spend to the point where we started to get sort of diminishing returns. And then we did beef up our support areas, and we believe we now have the right capacity to deal with our objectives of digitization, system development of new products. So if we can perhaps then just look at the OUTsurance slides as part of the pack, if you can have a look at slide 15 there, that just highlights the new business premium written. And you can see the healthy jump there in 2019, 27.5% jump as highlighted. If you look at the next slide, we're just highlighting our long-term underwriting margins. Worth noting there is the stability in the underwriting margins, but also, I mean, the South African underwriting margins being quite high in absolute terms relative to most of our peers. Now, part of that is obviously pricing discipline, underwriting discipline, and sophistication. But I think an important point to also highlight is disciplined growth, because we've previously gone through phases where we've grown slower, but if the profitable growth is not available, we don't take it. So you do get opportunities to to jump onto platforms or do partnerships which might give easy premium growth, but it won't allow you to achieve your underwriting objectives, and we're not scared to shy away from those. Also worth highlighting perhaps just is it is a fact that our market share in the direct personal line space in South Africa is very high. We estimated north of 33%. Now, if you have a cherry-picking model, then it's unrealistic to think we're going to go to 50 or 60% there. And as such, there is the need to diversify into different product categories and also different distribution channels. And the reality is that the margins in those are likely to be lower than on our personal lines direct business in South Africa. So as these businesses grow faster, our average overall margin is likely to come down a little, but we have no intention to sort of neglect our core personal lines business, and we do have hurdle rates which these new businesses need to meet. So it's not as if we're going to cannibalize or dilute the existing business at all. If we could perhaps then look at slide number 17, just as I spoke to the loss ratio, if you look at the OUTsurance line there, you'll see that in 2012 we also went below the target range. And just for those where if the graph is not that clear, the target band for South Africa is 50 to 55 net loss ratio. And as flagged last year, we stepped below that again, and that was purely a function of improving accident claim frequencies. To give context, over the last 10 years, our accident claim frequency improved by 25%. So people only bumped their cars 75% as much in 2019 as they did in 2009. And as such, the pricing action which we took, probably also worth highlighting is just that we have target bands. We won't rush to take that to the middle or the top of the band. While we're in this investment phase with slightly higher cost ratios, we'll aim to operate in the lower end of our target bands. So that just gives a bit of context that the increase in the loss ratio is certainly not a change in philosophy, or that we chasing business by compromising on underwriting standards. We've seen these trends before, and we're well within our target band. And then maybe if I can just speak to the cost ratio, you can see the cost ratios go up in line with the investment made. Maybe first speaking to OUTsurance, a key growth area for us is OUTsurance Commercial, not just because of a lot of runway that's left in that market, but also because of the opportunity to diversify, be a bit less motor-only reliant. And if you split that cost ratio for OUTsurance between personal and commercial, then we do expect the commercial one to still go up in the current year. That investment in the agency force is likely to peak this year, but it will still be quite high in the year thereafter. Long run, once we reach sort of a stationary state, we expect the commercial cost ratio to be just below 30%. In terms of personal lines, we believe we already reached the top of the cost ratio, and as such, from here on in, we believe we can perhaps reclaim a percent or so. But it is a reality that, I mean, part of our focus is this digital drive, client self-servicing, and you invest a lot in IT development to develop functionality for clients to service themselves, and the take-up is not 100% on day one. In fact, you have to incentivize clients initially, and that also has a cost. So that's why the payback on those digital investments will happen over a period of time. But we don't see the personal lines cost ratio in South Africa increasing further from where it's now. And then maybe lastly, to speak to the UB cost ratio, we also foresee that one might still increase a bit this year because of investment in new products and growth. However, we foresee that after this current 2020 year, we should reclaim some of the lost ground. And long term, we do believe that cost ratio should return to just below 30% once we're in a stable state. I think that's the key ones I wanted to highlight. Jan, maybe you can speak to our normalized earnings and ROE perhaps.
Absolutely. I'll touch on our dividend payments for the year. There's obviously a bit of a disconnect. Our dividend is up slightly. However, our normalized earnings being down 12.5%. I mean, the reason why our dividend, we maintained dividend was there a couple of reasons there. So first of all, Hastings increased their dividend payout ratio during the course of the year. So that assisted us with a bigger flow through from the Hastings dividend that we received. We also resumed a dividend payment out of our life insurance business, and that follows implementing a asset liability management program that hedges a large component of the interest rate risk embedded in the life insurance balance sheet. And outside of that, the group is trading from very strong capital positions across the group. So those are the key themes supporting a sustained ordinary dividend payment. We also paid a special dividend. That special dividend is associated with two key components. The first is a release of a strategic capital buffer. That capital buffer was held for the banking project, which Herman touched on earlier. And then we also, we're reducing the Tier 2 capital that's held by UE. So back in 2013, the group extended capital to UE in the form of redeemable preference shares, because at that stage we didn't want to dilute the management team and the business was in need of further capital because of its strong growth profile. That capital is now returning to the South African balance sheet and we've received the first increments of that in August. And because of that structural change, it releases a further amount of capital on the outsurance balance sheet. So those two components really support the payment of a special dividend. The reduction in the group's surplus capital position will aid the ROE going forward. You can see that we generated an ROE of 25.5% for the year. And with this reduction in capital and hopefully recovery and profitability into the future, we will see the ROE lift in future years.
Maybe just a last comment on that slide number 20, where you can see also the long-term compound growth, and which we're demonstrating there is also that the top line and bottom line growth is not always in sync. So from sort of 2012 to 2015, we had fairly flat top line, but we had fairly flat bottom line, but strong top line growth. And after that, it reversed a bit. And I believe we're in a bit of an investment phase again, like we were sort of 2012, 2013. And I mean, that has to be kept in mind that there's no linear sort of progression here, that you go through these investment cycles and hockey sticks in your business. But if you look at that long-term trend, the growth is still there.
And I think it probably speaks a bit to management confidence and the confidence that we have in the internal valuation to say that through the cycle, because of the sustainability and the predictability of the target ranges, whether it's cost claims or premium growth, we have a lot of confidence in that valuation as well as the one or similar one that we've performed at Hastings. So I think in conclusion, before we take questions, we believe that, first of all, safety first, and that's that the portfolio is looking very good from a risk discipline point of view. Yet we have enough investments into the future to make the future earnings also interesting and growing. So it's a nice balance, but as I said, the focus has been on batting down the hatches and making sure that we can withstand the macroeconomic pressures, which have not been easy to handle. So with that, that's the formal part. I think we have quite a bit of time for questions, if you may have any. Toby van der Meer, who is the CEO of Hastings, is in the country. Unfortunately, this call was just too early for him to attend. But if you had a special request to maybe talk to Toby while he's here, please make contact with us, and we will try and accommodate you. There's a lunch also in Johannesburg tomorrow for those of you here, if you still wanted to attend that, and Toby will be there. So if I may ask Chris, the operator, to see whether there were any questions.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you do have a question, please press star and then one on your touchtone phone or on the keyboard on your screen. You will hear a confirmation tone that you have joined the queue. If you wish to withdraw your question, please press star and then two. Our first question is from Larissa van Deventer of Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. Just one quick question. We've seen multiple years now of strong earnings in Discovery, but cash outflows, net of borrowings. Management insists that on their five-year capital plan, they do not need a rights issue, but they won't share the details of their capital plan. In theory, if Discovery were to have a rights issue, to what extent would you be able to follow?
Larissa, our own capital planning at an RMI level, we do believe that you have to take opportunity but also be prepared for emergency. Not that that we've had any of those, but certainly within our plan, we would always have enough capacity to support a rights issue at any of our investments, as we've done with OUTsurance as well as Discovery fairly recently. So, and I guess as you would appreciate, we want to retain our 25% shareholding minimum in the likes of a MTM and a Discovery. So to the extent that there would be a capital raise at these businesses, our default would be to follow.
You do have a target leverage ratio, which is 15 to 20%, and you mentioned that you're currently at 18. Can we then reasonably extrapolate from 18 to 20 and assume that that is your remaining capacity?
Yes, you can, as long as we wanted to stay in that target. I think there could well be an argument that for the right opportunity, we would have to assess our target, but I don't think it's a real intention to step out of that target. But it's like anything else, it's a guiding principle, and for the right reasons, one has to stay flexible.
Are there any covenants that prevent you from exceeding the 20% target?
No.
Thank you very much. Sorry?
No, these are really what the banks indicated to us and the work that we've done on our peers. It hangs together also with our dividend policy and dividend payout. So it's merely a target, which I think is very well within the limit of prudence. So stepping above 20 doesn't mean that it's imprudent, but I think it's much more about a conservative target for the longer term.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one. We'll pause a moment to see if we have any further questions. So we have no further questions in the queue.
Thank you, Chris. With that, I'd like to thank you for your time, and we will see you next year, same time, same place.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that then concludes this conference call, and you may now disconnect your lines.